You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Series 9, Episode 3 of the show coming your way this week. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you as ever. We're brought to you by our sponsor, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions. Delighted to say we're going to have interviews with the new Cove boss, Mick McDermott, and the Drogheda United midfielder, Shane Farrell, on tonight's podcast. So two really intriguing guests that we will have on this week's pod. We're going to start very shortly. We're talking about some of the hot topics that happened since our last podcast, particularly Stephen Bradley taking aim at the FAI, that late postponement in Talla on Sunday. And we will, of course, look back at what happened on the pitch in both the Premier Division and First Division over the weekend and look ahead to this weekend's games. As ever, we'll have the Predictions League, we'll have the Hotline, and we'll have much more throughout the course of the show. So great to have your company once again this week. Between the Stripes LOI podcast, coming to you free every single week on all the podcast platforms that are out there. Gary, good to speak to you. Good to have you on again. I suppose we'll start, as I said, with a few hot topics this week. Stephen Bradley, last week it was Jaime or Hal Grimson in his firing line. This week it was the FAI themselves.
Yeah, I don't know. I like, what's he crying about now? Like, regardless of what he said and no matter the legitimacy of it, like, it's the second week of the season. I know there was a serious mess on Sunday there, in particular with the game being called off so late. But like, I don't know. I think I'm just a bit jaded of that at the moment from managers. You know, Duffery shot a few bits as well, didn't he?
This is not what we're looking for. Is this not what we're always asking for? A bit more juice out there. Of course, we'll get to it later, won't we? Tiernan Lynch and Alan Reynolds sideline Barney. Although I don't know how much involved Lynch was, to be honest. I thought he was a tad unlucky to get the red card. But there's quite a bit going on in the League of Ireland weeks of the season.
Yeah, but what do you make of it? Like genuinely, like I'm just
Bradley.
Yeah.
I think he's spot on. I think he's obviously standing up for a colleague who he feels was wronged, and I think most people feel that is the case with Colin Healy. So I have no issues with his comments there. And I think me and you've probably spoken enough about the FAI down the last couple of years on this podcast to say that we're probably in the same camp in terms of thinking about maybe the people at the very top of the FAI. That's not to take away from the league department, by the way. I think the league department at the minute is doing great work. I said that recently here on the pod. The new TV deal, the new radio deal, the new Rockshore deal, the fantasy football, everything's on the up and up League of Ireland-wise at the moment. But I think the very, very top, I would have genuine concerns about some of the decisions that have been made and some of the lack of decisions, and more so the pace of the decisions, i.e. It took 8 months to hire a national team manager. So I think Stephen Bradley had very legitimate concerns, which he raised, and probably, you know, a good platform, a good time to raise it going into a European game. It's just a shame that he didn't get the result on Thursday night. A real missed opportunity, would you agree?
I would. I watched it on Thursday, and I had this feeling that it was going to not go their way. I think, extremely surprised, and I think I just nearly had like the story about it being a hard look. Oh shucks! Oh, yeah. Geez, we're so close. I had that feeling nearly the whole night.
It's ingrained us in us, isn't it? In Irish football, from the national team to Irish teams in Europe, there always seems to be that, as you said, shucks, hard luck.
Yeah,
heroic defeat.
Yeah. There's a bit of that. All right. Now look, it's not to the levels of, we'll say, the rugby team, but.
They'll be knocking the rugby team triple crown champions, lad.
Oh, get the grand slam. I just think it's a bit, they obviously left it behind them. There's no question about that. And I know it hurt, but I would like to see it hurt more. Like, there was this, like, oh, we've done really well to get here. Oh, it's terrible we didn't win. But there was opportunity there. Like, I think throughout the course of the two games, they had an hour out in Norway against 10 men.
Mm.
They had an hour, or I can't remember.
Well, I suppose in Norway, they did capitalize on the fact Molde went down to 10. They scored a goal in the second half, and you know, a 1-0 win on the road away from home was a great result. And the red card the other night didn't come until, was it late in the second half?
Yeah, it was late enough. But
I know they had extra time after that, but you see it so often, any level of football, extra time comes, it just fizzles out. Everyone's afraid to make a mistake, and inevitably it's penalties, and it just didn't go Rovers' way. I think the most disappointing thing, obviously, will be that, again, it's another goal in Europe where they've, as you like to say, they haven't just shot themselves in the foot, they've blown it clean off. I mean, Lopez and Grace have to deal with that better, particularly Grace. I think he has the chance to...
McGinty doesn't do great either.
No, I get to McGinty 100%. Lopez is the first line of defence. It goes over his head. Grace is there and can clear it away, but whether he got a call from the keeper or whether he just felt the keeper was going to get there, I'm not sure, but he could have just hooked it away and that's where it ends, but he doesn't. He lets it bounce again. McGinty comes out. He doesn't deal with it decisively, and it's just such a poor goal to give away. I suppose Molde would say, look, well, we gave away a goal even more stupid than that in the first leg. So maybe they'll feel it leveled out, but it's just the timing of it, isn't it? It's such a poor goal to give away early enough in the game as well, when they looked really comfortable. They were seeing a lot of the football. Rovers, I was watching the game at work the other night, and I thought Rovers looked really, really comfortable up until the concession of that goal. And they were the better team for quite a bit of it. They lacked a little bit of cutting edge on the night, but I think overall they'd be extremely disappointed, because there's no doubt about it, Molde are a bang average side. They're nowhere near the team they were when they beat Rovers comfortably in the competition, or in the Europa League or the Conference League group stages a couple of years ago.
Well, look, I couldn't tell you when they played them last, but I just mean, like, all of those things are true. Molde aren't the team that they were, it would appear. Not as if I watch much Norwegian football. I'm bad enough watching as much League of Ireland as I do. And I think the opportunity that was there, as you said, they're an average side. Rovers were on top for a lot of the game, I felt, in Tala. And I feel like they should have capitalized on the opportunity that was there for them. But they were 1-0 up from the first leg away from home. Great result. And then, obviously, to concede such a stupid goal is emotional enough. But to not... like, push forward. Like, I know it was nearly more... I don't know if it was fear, or, as you said, regarding extra time, was it a fear of making a mistake or, you know, doing something stupid? But I think, like, you have to go for it as well. Like you don't win stuff or go deep. I'm not saying that they could win the conference league.
Well, look, it would have been Legia Warsaw in the next round. I think that was a tie they would have had a real chance in. So it's such a shame they didn't make it to that stage. But I don't think a couple of years ago me and you would have expected to make a comment like this. But you could really see how much they missed Dylan Watts on the night in the midfield.
Oh, brutal. Absolutely brutal. Like, and you could fit nearly, I was nearly going, oh, where's Watts?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he actually was a significant miss in the midfield. I obviously would have serious reservations about Gary O'Neill in particular, but the way Watts has been playing for the last probably 12, 16 months, whatever, he's been sensational. Yeah. And he was a huge loss in the middle of the park for Shamrock Rovers. I'd probably... as you said, I can barely believe I'm saying this, but probably was
the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It was a great run and all of that. It started nearly, you know, last July and played a bajillion matches and whatever. Mm. All of those things are true, but at the end of it, you're probably going to look back, geez, we made a hames of that. We had a serious opportunity to do something. One final thing about the match on Thursday. Was every player on the bench for Rovers a teenager?
Vast majority were, I think, weren't they?
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, I totally sympathise with that. I appreciate that completely. So, like, I understand that, you know, it was a difficult situation, but I still think they left it behind.
Mm. Had it been a couple of days later, I think Rory Gaffney would... I think Gaffney was named on the bench for Sunday, wasn't he? Which we'll get to in a second. But how fit he would have been, how much of an impact he would have been able to make, I'm not sure. But
could have run them boys around for 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's a good point you make though about the the lack of experience on the bench, because we all speak about the Rovers squad and, you know, how strong it has been over the last number of years. But you can look at it two ways, I suppose. There's young players coming through and coming in, like Noonan's come in from Pats there, and he's probably going to be their main man now for the season up front. And then the other 16-year-old chap, his name escapes him, but he came on. He looks a right baller as well. So there's been criticism, I suppose, that Rovers maybe with the academy they have, that we haven't seen enough players come through the academy compared to maybe someone like St. Pat's. So maybe they're going to change tack slightly and bring through more younger players. But yeah, you obviously need to get that balance right. But look, Cork City would have been absolutely delighted to see Rovers drag the penalties on Thursday, but they didn't get a chance to do anything about it then, because the game on Sunday called off roughly half an hour before kickoff. Unfortunately, this is a situation me and you are all too familiar with. I know you were down in Cove that time a couple of years ago when the game was called off walking up the hill, but I know me and you were outside the Markets Field when the game was called off, what, about 40-50 minutes before kickoff. So this is something we have unfortunately seen before in the league, and it reared its head again at the weekend. I know everyone wants to give a game every chance, but I think when you've got a situation like that where there's a large number of supporters travelling a long distance, you've probably got to be more decisive with the decision earlier in the day.
Totally agree. I think there's, you know, I was thinking for some reason, not that I watch it, but I've seen clips of, like, you know, when in Formula One, where like in 3 laps time, there's going to be, you know, 4 mil of
in the second corner, they know exactly where it's coming down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, now obviously that's Formula One, but like from what I understand, I think that it's just a ref comes out and looks at the pitch. He's not opening up or ringing up Aaron to go, well, lad, what do you think about Tala at 6 o'clock? Will we get another Skite of Rain between now and then? I think based on like the weather that day, and we'll say the water content of the pitch at 3 o'clock. I think it would have been reasonable to go, right, boys, there's 3 hours. If there's another skiff of rain here, we're in serious bother.
Yeah.
And there was a heavy shower around 4 or 5 o'clock, or 4 or half 4, around that cut. So that would have been, you know, you would have been looking up at the sky in 5 minutes of that. You're like, well, this game can't go on. I think the decision, there has to be a different process implemented here. This idea of refs looking at it, we'll say 2-3 hours before a match, is not a runner here. Something has to be taken into account with forecasting and stuff like that. And I think they need to like make this process a bit more technical, rather than going, you know, pegging a ball down on a pitch, like, oh no, bouncing that. I'm not sure how that's done. But that's why the FAI is there. Let them decide that. Make something up. You know, I think the other thing about, particularly, you know, in football in Ireland, someone somewhere has already done this. Do you know what I mean? Like, some footballing nation has already came up with a better solution for this than what we have. We are, as most things in this country, we're 10 to 15 years behind. So ring up someone else. Well, lad, you're from a wet country like ourselves, what do you do? Because someone has already figured this out. And the idea that, like, we're getting a ref in and there's people coming from all corners of the country going to a match in a certain location, it has to stop. And like, that's not talking even about pitches in general. Like, we saw another kind of postponement there on Friday as well, Longford and Wexford.
Yeah, well, look, this is a point I was making to you last week about playing surfaces. Now, Tala, it was just a bit of a freak thing this week. That would have been the third game of the week.
4 days.
Yeah, on the pitch. So it's taken a bit of damage and just the freak downpour that occurred earlier in just
there was nothing freak about that. It wasn't like blue sky and then seconds later it was.
Anyway, look, this isn't something that happens regularly at Tala. But true. Wexford have been having issues with drainage there clearly for probably
a lifetime.
A good while now. The UCD Bowl, is it rugby season? I don't know, but we talked about it last week in terms of the opening weekend. There was a lot of commentary about the pitch on the telly from Tolka. A few people mentioned Turner's Cross. Pitches aren't in great nick at this time of the year, as you would imagine, but there's a lot of money going into other parts of the game at the minute, particularly players' wages. Wages are really on the up. I think the average wage now for a Premier Division player is about £1,000 a week. And I'm not saying that the players shouldn't earn that, and I don't want to see them earning more money. We want them to get as much out of the game as they possibly can. It's a short career and they deserve it. But 100%. There needs to be a serious look at playing surfaces now. The same way there is with the licensing for a stadium. If the pitch isn't up to Nick, something needs to be done. There's going to be this big influx of UEFA money coming now. And I know there's a lot of talk that, that money has to be ring-fenced for your academy and for this and that. But I think there needs to be a serious conversation now within the league about keeping some money aside to try and increase the quality of playing surfaces across the board, because there's only 10 matches that were due to take place last weekend. Three of them were off, and another three were on astro pitches. So, it's not great for the product, I don't think. Let's move on though, Gary, and talk about what actually happened on the pitch over the course of the weekend. And we'll start with the game that was on Virgin Media on Friday night, Galway United 2, St. Pat's 1. I think we should start by offering our condolences to John Caulfield on the passing of his mother. He only buried her that morning, and then later that night, I think from what I've heard, he wasn't expected to take charge of the team, but he decided to do that. And obviously the players and everyone was inspired by that, and a fantastic result as they beat St. Pat's by 2-1.
Absolutely. I am very happy for, obviously, before I go any further, condolences to John Caulfield and his family. But I'm delighted to see Patrick Hickey doing so well.
Sorry, did I not flag that man up last week on the pod and the week before? Said he was going to have a big season.
Oh, you probably did, yeah.
So I do get some things right.
Okay, fair enough. he's obviously he had a good second half of the season last year. Probably found it a bit hard to start, get a goal. At the start, after his move to Galway, but he's been sensational for Galway since he got into the team. The first goal was very lucky, the deflection, a really lazy leg from, was that Redmond?
Yeah, I'm not sure who threw the leg out. Very lazy, and aside from that, the defence were very slow to get out to the shot from Hickey as well. But you're right, a very lazy leg thrown at him.
Yeah, honest to God, there was no urgency in blocking that shot. Or no, and definitely the block was poor and just took it out of the way of Anang. So
and especially playing Galway, you've got to be expecting there's going to be a lot of second ball activity on the edge of the area. Like, they're going to be playing long balls up, a lot of balls are going to be breaking on the edge of the area. Have to be quick and get out to it, and Pat certainly weren't there.
No, they weren't next or near it. And even the second goal, the way it kind of bobbled around and it kind of just spat out to the right hand side. And you're looking at it, you watch it back and you're looking at Hickey because you know he's going to score. And you're watching it back and there's no one, look at the size of the man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's a cross coming in. I better do something about this. And it's almost a free header into the bottom corner. From 6 yards out. Really, really poor defending. But look, I think the talk of this game has to be Aidan Keane's goal.
Unbelievable.
Wasn't it just class?
Yeah, because he actually tried something similar earlier in the game and didn't get. He got the touch, decent touch, and then he didn't get a hold of the shot at all.
The volley,
made a mess of it, and then he got this just absolutely spot on.
Oh God, it was lovely. And someone made the point of it. I think it might have been the league account. It was great that the television operation was there.
Yeah,
because he got it from more angles. He got to see it from loads of different places, but it was just wonderful to watch. Such a lovely little flick up, nearly hovered there for him for a minute, and he was able to smack it into the net. Really, really wonderful goal to watch. I've watched it a few times. I watched it a few times even today, and it was just that's just a lovely bit of class. Now, it has to be said. So
some great saves in the game from Brendan Clark as well. I know he was probably disappointed with the goal he conceded on the opening weekend against Cork. I think he let one kind of trickle in under his gloves at the near post, but he produced some really, really important saves here. But a huge result for Galway. Pats, I think there's already a huge overreaction. I was listening to the call-in show the other night, and some people already talking about Pats, and looking at Twitter the other night, and people already writing them off. I think a massive overreaction. This isn't the start I obviously expected, but I have flagged up that Kenny's teams are slow starters now. I wouldn't expect them to have 1 point after two matches, but it's way too early in the season. I think the quality of that goal from Keane just goes to show the quality of player they have in that team, and when it all eventually clicks, this Pats team will be a force. They will be title contenders this season.
I think so, yeah. I think it just needs a bit more time, which is obviously disappointing because, like, I think certainly I was talking about the opportunity of pre-season for Stephen Kenny.
Yeah.
You know,
and they had a really good pre-season going out abroad, playing the games they did against Molde and against Vancouver. So they had a really good pre-season. And I did ask Aidan Keane when we had him on the pod about that, did he think, like, playing that level of opposition would help them in the early part of the season? And he certainly did. Well, now, look, he looks sharp, but I'm afraid some of his teammates around him don't exactly at the moment. But who've Pats got this weekend? They've got a home game against Sligo Rovers. That's when it could take off, because I'll be talking about Sligo now in a few minutes. I was at their game against Drogheda on Friday, and they were very, very poor. But look, we'll move on. Waterford 0, Shelburne 1. Classic Shells performance here.
Yeah, the original duffer at it again. Really good result here, because it was a bit tricky for them. With Waterford particularly having a really good opening weekend result away to Sligo, you would have like, oh yeah, we can take down these lads. First away game of the season for Shells. So, but look, it wasn't to be. Maple got his goal to open his account for the season. Well taken.
Yeah, great work from Sean Boyd, it has to be said. But I think if you're Keith Long, you'll be extremely disappointed to see Boyd bursting through the middle of two of your players to get that cut back to Meepo.
It was a tidy finish. Yeah, but no, really good finish. And like, particularly after the opening weekend when he did miss a few chances. I know he was unlucky with the one off the post, but like, you definitely, not that I was a prolific striker now at all, but like, you know, next year it was three or four games without a goal. And
I think the more pleasing thing though for Duff is it looks like Boyd and Meepo have clicked instantly. So if one isn't scoring, the chances are the other one will. And absolutely, we've seen them link up a few times now already, like they did on Friday night. So that partnership looks like it could be different gravy this season for Shells.
That'd be something else for them, like two lads that are scoring. And I think I think a relationship like that on the pitch is something else. You know, it'll help each other score more goals, obviously. But like, I think the last time I saw it was when, do you remember Christian Magerson and Benny and O'Brien Whitmarsh?
Yeah, first couple of games. Yeah,
like they were just like
telepathic,
and it was really nice to watch. Like, yeah, and the results did improve for the town, but like that telepathy.
Yeah.
really, just made it. It improved the overall performance. See, like, never mind.
It's a rare thing to see these days. The days of the Sutton and Shearer, the Sully and Shaw. You don't see those partnerships anymore.
No, you don't.
Most teams play one up front. So it's great to see the two lads playing together and getting on so well. And it could be a difference maker for Shelburne this season. And I know I've mentioned him already a couple of times this year on the pod, but Harry Wood looks like he's really getting back to the levels he was hitting when he first arrived in the league. So, I mean, if you have those three players ticking every week, we know how strong Shells are defensively. I think we're going to see a lot of these 1-0 wins and maybe wins to nil, because they've got the quality in the final third now that maybe they didn't have at times last season, particularly when Boyd was out injured or suspended. But with those three players firing and on form, with the defensive solidity they've got behind them, I think Shells are going to be very, very difficult to stop this year. Derry City 1, Bohemians 0. The we hate between the stripes derby here going away.
Yeah, that's a good name for it there. Did you get to see much of this, or did you watch a match on the telly?
I was at Drogheda, but I did watch back some of this game, yeah.
Yeah. I don't really know what to make of it. I watched a good
chunk. Great hit from Duffy.
Yeah, that was kind of the only thing that happened, I feel. Like, it was a very forgettable performance, I found. Great hit by Duffy, as you said, but I didn't.
I think Derry did have they had other chances to score more goals, but I think still breaking down defenses still looks like it's an issue at Derry.
Yeah, I think so. No, and like of course they had chances. Like, I'm not saying that they didn't, but it just
Talbot made a couple of very good saves, it has to be said.
Yeah, no, I know that. I'm just saying. I don't know, I just felt like there was something, a staleness about the game or something like that. I don't know if it's my obvious hatred for Derry coming through, but like, I don't know. Yeah, look, it was a good result for Derry, particularly after the opening weekend blowout.
You know, people are going to take that so literally now as well.
What the?
All the lads said they hate Derry this week on the podcast.
Oh, just yeah. Cut up that 2 second clip there.
Yeah.
But yeah, like look, it's a good opener. For the game of Brandywell, like I thought, like there was this idea. Like I think I went 1-1 on the predictions. Like I was a bit, we'll say, nervous that Bowes might do something. But they couldn't get it done. I think. Do you think how close do you think Derry are going to be this season? Like, I know it's second game and all of that.
Yeah. I said on the first pod, I don't see them winning it this year. I'm going to stick with Pats, but I think Shells have probably gone up a few places in my league table in the opening few weeks because they look really, really sharp. I think they could retain it or they'll be second. I think Shells are going to go very close. Rovers will have to wait and see what sort of effects having such a prolonged season is going to have on them. I think it's good that they've probably got some fresh young players coming through there that might perk them up a wee bit, but I think Derry will probably be battling with the likes of Bowes for fourth, to be honest.
And are you delighted with their new signing?
I was going to ask you about that. So Kevin Holt coming in from Dundee United, I mean, this is a man that was playing regularly in that Dundee United team in the Scottish Premiership, and it would seem that he has forced this move to Derry City. So I suppose it's very unique. We don't usually see this in the League of Ireland, but it's an interesting one.
It certainly is an interesting one. Like, it must have been a very attractive deal for him to start that crack.
Yeah.
Particularly, like, I think he had played in around 20 games a season for Dundee, didn't he?
Yeah.
And they're fourth in the table. Like, they're not, you know, it's not, you know, hell for them at the moment. So, like, it must have been a very attractive deal for the player. I know you were concerned about his age profile.
I wasn't concerned about his age profile. All I did was put a tweet up pointing out the age profile of the signings, because I don't think that will work, personally. I don't think that will work. Yeah. Bringing all these 30.
But did you not know Derry can spend the money any way they like?
They can't. People were tweeting us like, oh, you know, what's the owner's name up there? Sorry.
I haven't a clue.
It's his money. I never said he couldn't spend it. I think it's great that, as I said, players are forcing their way out of Scottish Premiership clubs to come to the League of Ireland. Brilliant. If it's your money and you want to spend it, go ahead. It's great to have this sort of stuff going on in the league. And again, Derry, the Brandywell, that new stand's gone in there. It looks fantastic. They've got the new training centre now. There's a lot of good stuff going on at Derry City, and people seem to think that we're just shitting all over it. All I'm saying is I don't think this approach will work.
Yeah.
I don't think it was necessarily a lack of experience that cost them the title last year. I think it was more the tactics, and I know they've got a new manager in there, and I haven't actually seen Derry live yet, so I can't really comment on his tactics. I just don't think they'll win it this year, and if they don't win it this year, you know, this team that everyone thinks is a bit old is going to be a year older next year. So, if you want to spend X amount on 30 whatever plus players, that's their decision, and that's the way they're going about it. And it will just be absolutely intriguing to see whether it works. I mean, Tiernan Lynch said it himself to me. You know, if they win the league, nobody will be talking about the age profile. They'll say, oh, sure, they won it because they have the most experienced players and they went about it the right way and blah, 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 and the signings were great. If they don't win it, everyone will talk about the age profile.
Yeah.
This is simply a talking point, and that's all we're doing on the pod is raising these talking points. That's what a podcast is about. But some people seem to think we're here to tickle people's bellies and tell everyone how great every club is. That's not what this podcast is about. So, Derry 1, Bowes 0. Drogheda 3, Sligo Rovers 0. This is the game I was at on Friday night. Sligo Rovers fans won't want to see me going to any more of these games, because last time I went to a Drogheda Sligo game, it was 7-0. To Drogheda. So a few of the Drogheda lads after did say to me, you'll have to come every week. I think I'm actually probably going to go to their game on Friday against Galway as well. But this was a really poor Sligo performance. Drogheda didn't even have to play that well, in all honesty.
The Sligo defending was absolutely deplorable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like, you're looking back on some of the chances, and like, I think the league account put up a clip of Darren Markey there in the past couple of days, like doing them out on the right hand side.
Yeah.
And like, lads falling over themselves. Like, it was absolutely brutal.
The first goal, a little bit of sympathy because a Sligo Rovers player slips out on the far side and Shane Farrell pounces on it. And Farrell, by the way, who we're going to hear from very, very shortly, best player on the pitch the other night. He was absolutely everywhere. He wins it and cuts it back. And Joshua Thomas, who looked really, really sharp on the night, I think he's going to have a good season. He tucks it away first time. But the second goal... Sorry, go ahead.
Is he there until the summer only?
Because
he's on loan from Swansea.
Swansea, yeah. I'll have to check that for you. But obviously, they'll have Douglas James Taylor to come back at some stage. But Thomas looks good. He reminds me a little bit of Freddie Draper in some ways.
Yeah.
The second goal, though, Warren Davis comes on as a sub. And he's only on a couple of minutes. And he's played down the right-hand side. And he just sits John Mahan down on his arse.
Yeah.
And cuts it back. And Darren Markey tucks it away. And then they get done on the third. I think it was Alua got in behind, his shot saved by the goalkeeper. It's a drop of the player first to the rebound. Sligo players just like statues looking at it. So three really poor goals that they gave away. But Drogheda, as I said, didn't really have to come up with big brain stuff to break down this Sligo Rovers team. And I think what was worrying as well from a Sligo Rovers perspective was that they looked out-muscled on the night. They weren't really up for the fight. And that's not the first time we've seen that when they've played Drogheda.
No, certainly not. Like you mentioned there for the second goal, like sat down John Mahan out on the right hand side, in front of the Sligo fans, might I add. Sat down, walks into the box, pulls it back, and like even the attempt at block, whoever that was, you know, it was nearly like a 4-year-old afraid to get a boot with the ball. Do you know what I mean? Like nearly jumping out of the way. And it was the same then for the third goal. Like as you said, Alua, like he picks up the ball nearly on the halfway line. And just runs towards the goal. Like, do you know what I mean? It's not as if like it's a breakaway of that much. Runs towards the goal. That's a reasonable enough shot, like a reasonably powerful shot. But it was well into the keeper's midriff that he could have probably caught it.
He had a really shaky game, Sergeant. Early in the game, Shane Farrell won the ball in the midfield, went on a run, got a shot away, and the keeper let it under his grasp, and it looked like it was going to be one of them that trickled in, but he managed just to sprawl back and get it off the line. But he didn't look comfortable on the night.
And then, but like even the ball just goes past the Sligo player running in, trying to cover, and then the follow-up block, there's nothing to that as well. Like there's no... From what we've seen,
and just that was the defensive side of the performance was Sligo. Offensively, they offered little to nothing until they went 2-0 down. They did have a goal chalked off for offside,
and it was offside. I looked at it again.
Kean Kavanagh, I think, turned it in. But aside from that, there was one where again someone fired a ball across the face of goal, and I think Kavanagh almost got onto it at the back post. But aside from that, they created absolutely nothing on the night. They looked really, really blunt. And very vulnerable at the back. So worrying signs for Sligo Rovers already.
Just on that, like we saw like a really poor opening half of the season for Sligo last year. Do you think that there's going to be a bit of a resurrection later on in the season, or are you more fearful this year? Because they have lost so many players.
They have, yeah. And even if I looked at the bench the other night and I was like, oh, there's no one there that's going to turn this game around. That was a concern. I looked at the two benches and I think Drogheda probably had the better options on the bench.
Yeah. More game changers, more...
Yeah.
More stuff to come on.
And yeah, even as just that bit of crunch in the midfield with Farrell and Ryan Brennan was absolutely unbelievable again the other night. Flying at the tackles, crunching lads, like really, really wanted it. And that was a big part of the result. But it's too early to call anything with Sligo because I think they were unlucky not to get something on the first game against Waterford, all them chances they missed. And it's almost like they used up their quota of chances because they created next to nothing against Drogheda. So maybe Sligo are going to be the sort of team this year that will be strong at home and struggle away. But we'll have to wait and see. But if people are talking about two teams there that are going to be down towards the bottom, then I think Drogheda will have taken a lot of encouragement from how that game played out the other night. But as I said, I thought Shane Farrell was the best man on the pitch the other evening. So we're going to hear from the Drogheda United midfielder on a number of topics, including his relationship with Damien Duff after Chicken Fillet Gate last year. So here's Shane Farrell on this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Shane Farrell, 3-0 win against Sligo Rovers. A really, really good performance from the team this evening.
Look, we want to build off last week against Pats. Nil all, it wasn't the best game probably to watch, but we were a team, you know. We all stuck together. We were hard to break down. We got a point and we wanted to build on that today. We want to show people what we're made of. Like, people were judging us already about not scoring goals, and today we scored 3, you know. But yeah, I just thought it was important to build on the result last week, and obviously four points in 2 games is very good, you know. But look, it's early days. It's 2 games into the season. You don't want to get carried away around.
Yeah, you mentioned there were some concerns maybe leading into the season about would there be a lack of goals in the team, because I was actually at your games against Dundalk and watched the President's Cup game as well, and obviously you're without Douglas at the minute, but for Joshua to get up and running this evening with that goal, I know you got the assist as well, very important for him to hit the ground running.
Yeah, and look, me and Joshua, probably shouldn't say this in case the manager hears, but we were playing PlayStation earlier and I told him that today's the day and I'll set her up. I want to be the one to kick off his career, you know, at Charter. And obviously the ball fell to me on the right side and I'd done a dummy and I just crossed it to Josh and he was there, but it's a great finish, like, you know. The ball's coming fast and the pitch is very slippery, so it's a great connection.
Yeah, you won the ball back over on the far side for that goal, and just a few minutes before that or early in the first half you won the ball midfield, went on a run, got a shot away, and it looked like it was going to just trickle in under the keeper.
I thought it was going in, but look, I want to add that to my game, you know. My stats haven't been good enough. If I'm being real, my stats weren't good enough. I had 1 goal last year and I was supposed to be a number 10. So look, this year is obviously I want to get my stats up and I want to do everything I can for the team. So I'm really happy to kick off the season with an assist.
Yeah, personally, I have to say I thought you were the best player on the pitch this season, won a lot of possession back and got attacks moving. So do you feel fitter maybe than you were this time last year?
I feel unbelievable, not kind of lie. I think my fitness is there, you know. I think it's shown, and hopefully it is shown. Like, I'll give everything to the crowd always, week in, week out. Pats was probably the most I've ever ran in my life. It was like 10 minutes in the Pats game last week, and I couldn't feel my legs. In the last few minutes, I was just digging in. But I always, when I first came here, I thought I'd be a 10. So, look, I personally think I can create. I love creating for the lads. Like, I want to come off the pitch knowing I did something. And today I'll go off to pitch, have a good sleep ahead.
I have to ask you as well, because you've mentioned there that you feel better now than you probably ever have before. You were subject to a lot of attention in the media last year, obviously, because of Damien's comments. Has that spurred you on, or how has that affected you? Because I would have been concerned maybe after that for you as a player, just the stick you were going to get off opposition fans and the like, but you seem to be thriving under it.
Yeah, I love it, you know. Even today I was getting a bit of stick. I think they said the chicken filler all, man. Yeah. Look, Damon's unbelievable, you know. We still to this day text as he rings you. But look, I sat down with Kev at the start of the year. I told him what I want to achieve, and he told me what he wants to achieve. On a personal note, today was one of those, what I want to achieve, you know. I want to come off the pitch and know when I did something, obviously with the win. But it's not all about me, it's about the team, it's about the subs that we brought on, it's about Dougie, Alicia, the lads that are injured. We're a squad, you know, so it's all about us.
And just to be clear on that, there's no ill feeling between you and Damien?
No, me and Damien have great respect for each other. We always will.
And there'll be no chicken fillet roll for the post-match feed tonight, no?
Unfortunately, I think we have pizza in there now. So.
Yeah, brilliant. Shane, thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, that's the first time I've spoken to Shane Farrell in person. Really, really good character. Good to see him doing so well. And good to see that he's put all the noise from last season behind him, Gary.
Absolutely. It is great to see. He's... obviously performing very well, as we saw the other night for Drogheda, so he's well over it now.
Right, let's move into the first division. We're going to be hearing from the Cove boss, Mick McDermott, shortly on the show, but we'll start with Athlone Town's hammering at home on Friday night against Treaty United. Our sponsor, Anthony, won't be a happy man listening back to this part of the show. He can probably skip over this. Athlone Town 0, Treaty United 5. This is a result that absolutely nobody saw coming.
No, certainly not, and look, hats off to Lee Devitt. Did he get 4 goals or just a hat-trick? I can't remember. But anyway, doesn't matter. He got a hat-trick anyway. But it was just a terrible, terrible, terrible showing from Athlone. There was no fight or bite or anything to their play. They seemed to be a bit lost, I would have said. Like, they'd no...
We spoke about some really poor pieces of defending earlier going through the Premier Division games. This Athlone game, there's 2 goals that really irked me if I was an Athlone supporter watching it. I think I think it's the second goal where...
Just before half-time, was it?
No Baba is carrying the ball out of his own box and he gets so far and then he kind of half goes down looking for a free kick. And it wasn't a free kick. He just throws himself to the floor. He ends up on his knees. And he's looking up at the ref, waiting for the free kick to be given. Ref doesn't give it, tells him to get up and play on. And Treaty take the ball. Baba gets up and starts walking. He just was like, right, I didn't get me free. I'm going to throw my arse at this. And he just walks and watches an attack develop. And Treaty score off that. And then I think it's the third goal, if I'm not wrong, where Cole Amore, him one, who we spoke about quite a bit on this pod over the last couple of seasons when he was at Bray. He just lets his man breeze by him. And I think one of the lads said on commentary, you know, that they were fearful he was going to give away a penalty because he got too tight to the man. And then they said he might as well have given away the penalty.
He might as well have,
compared to what he done. Yeah, that was a good line, to be fair.
It was, yeah. Like that was, there was a lot of letting stuff happen.
Yeah.
From an Athlone point of view. Like, as you said there, there was no real challenge by Cole on whoever it was that scored that. And he picked it up from so deep. Like, he was a good 20 yards outside of the box, was allowed drive into the box, not really hindered in any way before getting to the position where he took the shot from. And as you said, he should have taken him down for a penalty nearly if that was all that was going to be happening from Cole. So I don't really know how to, like, and then if you want to be really kind, could you say...
It was 3-0 at half-time, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And
yeah.
Then they go to a back three in the second half, and that was just a complete disaster. So they just look to be... Like, this is an Athlone team with a lot of new players. There's a lot going on within the dugout, I think, as well as we kind of put up there an exclusive during the week. And going to the back three, I'm not sure whose idea that was, but there seems to be a lot of voices, and I think there may be too many Chiefs in that whole setup at the moment, and just nobody really knows their job, their role, and you could see that on the pitch the other night. They just looked completely at sixes and sevens all over the place.
Yeah, no, like, even there was a chance there, I think it was, you know, just after the start of the second half, where and it's on the highlights, where I think Yo-Yo Madi blasted over.
Mm.
And if you look at the pricking that was done at the edge of the box, there was only two Athlone players involved in that bit of play and probably five or six Athlone defenders. The ball is crossed in and it's cleared extremely poorly. I think it's Van Geenen maybe that does it, that blocks it down. And it just falls to Yo-Yo Madi, and he blasts it over from when he really should have been scoring. But there was no block there. It just fell to him. It bounced a couple of times. He had plenty of time to get that shot on target. Just a really, really poor bit of defending. So much watching around, no one reacting, lying around the place, arms in the air. Like, this is a really, really bad... I know it's a tough night, particularly after the first half when you're 3-0 down. But you can't just give up like that. I think that's a really bad, really bad sign.
Second game in as well.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You haven't had time to make a hams your season yet.
Mm.
You can't be, you know, throwing the hands in the air as if, you know, oh, this is just the size of it now, nothing we can do, and blah, blah, blah. Just not good enough. And they'll have to do a lot of soul searching ahead of El Clasico on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. So a great result for Treaty, particularly after the defeat on the opening weekend against Cole, which probably shouldn't have happened. So a good rebound from them. Moving on, Harps 0, Dundalk 1. It was a really good free kick from Sean Keogh, player I really, really liked. That was the difference in the end.
Absolutely lovely strike. I think that was early enough on in the game as well, wasn't it? Kind of all she wrote then. But another good result for Dundalk. They're atop of the table now. I think the only team that won their first two games. So... They're already opening up a gap. You'll be delighted to see that, though, won't you?
Well, Wexford didn't get to play this weekend, so they would have had the chance, maybe. But again, if Dundalk not... I think, if I remember back to the start of last season, we were talking about Cork winning a lot of games, and we were thinking, oh, they're not blowing anyone away, but they're doing it in a very professional manner. And so far, that seems to be the same approach from Dundalk. Didn't create massive amount of chances in either of the first two games. But they look very well organized, very well drilled. And, you know, with that full-time footing under them, that should be enough to carry them through the season, I think.
I think I'd be very surprised if they're not first or second come the end of the season. I think the full-time lark,
will, you know, when it gets tougher as the season goes on, you're picking up injuries and stuff like that, and players aren't available, the full-time setting will certainly help to that end. So,
first or second, says you, who's their biggest threat?
I still think Cove. Like, we haven't, I know they had a...
Well, we can move on to their game. Nil-nil at home to Kerry, which probably a disappointing result from a Cove perspective, but they haven't exactly had the easiest of starts either. I know they had the great win on the opening weekend, but they had to come from 2-0 down against a Treaty team that a lot of people would have expected to struggle, just about pulled out of the fire. And then they couldn't get the win at home to kick on from that. So it's been a little bit of an underwhelming start in some ways from Cove, but the squad they've assembled, I think there's every reason to think that they should be up there come the end of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I said it every single week in the new season that, like, they have so many players that have played together and have won titles. So I think that's obviously a key thing to have in your squad, like players that have won it recently. Like, they'll know how to do it. They've been playing at a high level. So I think it's a really good opportunity for Cove. If they, you know, obviously a lot of it will come down to the manager and how, let's say, this new team joins up and plays together. But, like, because they've had so many players that have played together for so long, like, you can't imagine that it'll be much of a gelling in space. Like, even like where we're contrasting that, I would say the Longford team and the Bray team.
Yeah.
I think did you say there were 6 or 7 starters, new starters in the both teams?
Yeah.
So, like, that's obviously going to be a bit more difficult, but I can't imagine that Cove will be too far away come the end of the season.
As for Kerry, consecutive clean sheets, I don't know how often that's happened since they've joined the league, but very rare, I would imagine. They
definitely not 2 in a row.
I don't know how often.
Well, maybe not. But
they had that run last year where they drew 6 or 7 or 8 games in a row, remember? So there might have been a couple of clean sheets back-to-back there, but it's certainly been rare for them since they've come into the league. They have leaked a lot of goals, but they do look that bit more solid, bit more experienced. We obviously spoke to Conor McCarthy last week on the pod, and, you know, I made the point to him. He signed a lot of players that have experience of playing in the league, whereas when they first come into the league, a lot of lads coming out of the local leagues down there, so... And look that bit more streetwise. Just be interesting to see whether they can maintain it. But good start for Kerry, I think it is fair to say. But look, going back to Cove, I did speak to their manager, Mick McDermott, recently, and here's what he had to say. Mick, nice to meet you. Kieran Burke from Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Hope you're well.
Yep, all good.
Mick, I suppose you've managed and coached in some very exotic locations. How does Cove compare to some of your past placements?
It's very exotic from the postcards. Then when you arrive, the weather's a bit deceiving. But no, it's a beautiful part of the world that I always wanted to visit. Never had the opportunity, even growing up in Ireland, up in the north. But since I've been here, it's been, you know, the project has been amazing, to be honest. The people around the town have been brilliant. People around the club have been brilliant. So look, probably if you'd asked me a few years ago, did I expect to be in Cove? Probably the answer would have been no. But now that I'm here, it's been everything that I thought it would be, and probably a bit more. Like I said, it's been a good 8 weeks so far.
Just that word you used there, project, it's probably a real buzzword we hear a lot in football these days. It can mean a lot of things. What to you and to the people you're now working for, what is the project at Cove Ramblers?
Well, to me, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be been involved in a few projects. You know, going to Iran in 2011 with the national team, and to be honest, the place was a bit of a shambles, and working there for, you know, 6-7 years and leaving with, you know, 3 World Cup qualifications. There's a project taking over a bankrupt club in the north in the Irish League, and in 4 years qualifying for Europe 3 times and winning the Irish Cup. You know, there's a project. And Cove, when I was first introduced to the project, the idea, I had to listen really carefully because I wasn't interested in just a job. You know, I'd been living in Portugal and for a year, and I was waiting for the next opportunity. And when they explained their ideas and their vision for the club, then that's what really interested me. And it's again the idea to build a club, a sustainable club, a club in the heart of a community-based club. And I think that's exactly what we've got here. And of course, winning is a part of that. No, we can't deny that. So winning's the ultimate goal. And we could say that obviously promotion to the Premier League would be the a main target, whether that be this year or in the future. But that would definitely be a target the group at this point.
It's clear from your CV you're not afraid to go new places and try new things. Obviously, this is your first experience of League of Ireland football. How would you say your knowledge is of the league overall?
We spent a lot of time recruiting and watching the Premier League when I was up north for those 3.5 seasons, because the caliber of players sort of was on our recruitment radar. The League of Ireland First Division, not as familiar with. I won't deny that, but I have a great staff that has been around with local knowledge. You know, example, Richie Holland, extensive knowledge of the league, the area, the county. So I have good people around me. We jumped in with both feet from December 10th when I arrived. And, you know, we grabbed the players that we could. We then worked hard for that month to get the players we wanted as well. And I think we've done well, but thankfully the people around the club with local knowledge were a big help to me. But yeah, it's a new experience for me. And that, whether it was Kerry in the cup, whether it was Cork City here in the cup, and then, you know, 3D away, it's similar, very similar in style to the Northern League. You know, you got rock and roll every week. And, you know, there's some games you can play, some games you have to battle. But the sure thing is in these leagues, if you don't show up, you don't win the game. And so it's a really tough league, no doubt about it.
Final question for me, because I know there's a lot of people on the call here. In terms of the signings you have made, obviously quite a bulk of them have come from Cork City. Do you think that will give you an advantage in the early part of the season in terms of how quickly your team may or may not gel?
I would say, more to the point, a lot of my players come from Cork County. And I think that was important for us to build a team with a bit of something in their belly to play here. They wanted to be at Cove. They're from the county. We've got others from outside, yep, no doubt. But I wanted a profile of player who hungry to be here, hungry to accomplish something, the age. But I think the whole profile of our club, the players we brought in, is a good fit for where the club wants to be, what the town expects, and what I expect as a manager.
Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Right, and with that, we're going to start looking ahead to the weekend's matches. We'll start with the Premier Division. This is the Between the Stripes LOI podcast, Predictions League, and after week two, myself, Gary, and the listeners, we are locked on 6 points apiece. So 6 points for me, 6 points for Gary, 6 points for the listeners. Last week, who was our listener last week? It was Al, wasn't it, last week?
Al was week one.
Oh, he was week one. Who was week two? Can we remember?
Aina.
Ah, yes, Aina from Athlone. So he got 3 points last week. You got 3 points. I got four. So I was the top scorer last week. They actually aren't bad scores considering there were so many games postponed. So let's see who's going to be coming out on top this week. We'll start with Cork against Bowes in the Premier Division, Gary. And we're going to have Jim Fitzgerald, a Waterford fan, taking on myself and yourself this week.
I think there's a good opportunity here for Cork. I can see, you know, they're the week off as well, which I know, you know, it's a week. They've had an extra time off. But I think they'll be hungry, looking to play a game now. You don't want to... I know, was it last season that Longford had like 3 games called off in the first... Yeah. You know, and that ruins your momentum. So you'll be hopefully they'll be itching to go here. I think it's going to be a good game down in Turner's Cross. I'm going to go 2-1 Cork.
You're 1-2-1 Cork here. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. I know Bowes maybe didn't offer a whole pile offensively against Derry, but I think we've seen some nice play out with them in the game at the Aviva. Cork, the opening game against Galway, obviously was full of goals, but we are worried about them defensively a little bit. I wonder, is this the game where the Moose takes off? He was quiet the other night.
He was. Do you think he'll...
I think this is where he could make some hay.
All right, bonus point for you if he scores.
Lovely. Okay, so I'm going 2-2 and the Moose to get a goal there for Bowes. Jim's going for a 1-1 draw, so different opinions there across the board. Right, moving on, Derry against Waterford.
Another home game for them. Long old journey for Waterford.
Waterford really struggled in this fixture last year. They got some absolute pastings. I think Hoban got a couple of hat-tricks in this game last year.
Up in the Brandywell?
Yeah.
I do see something similar. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to Derry City. I think it's going to be a bit...
That's probably a good shout.
Quieter game, yeah. Would you have any concerns about Waterford early on?
No.
None at all?
Not really, no.
Fair enough. I don't think they're going to get 3 points here, though. I don't think they're going to get anything. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to Derry.
I'm going to follow you. I'm going to go 1-0 to Derry, despite my obvious hatred for Derry, according to some. And Jim, who is a Waterford fan, oh, he's going 2-0 to Derry, Gary.
Oh, geez, he's no faith at all.
He wants long out.
Oh, does he?
I don't know. No, no. moving on then. We've got
two games out. Get him out here.
Drogheda against Galway. I'm probably going to go to this on Friday.
I feel...
There was a cracker between these two last year in Drogheda. Then Galway get a couple of goals in injury time to win 3-2.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was 2-1 to Drogheda.
Yeah, and that was the night that Dundalk beat Rovers and Oriel, and there was a big swing and everyone thought, oh, here we go. But obviously, Drogheda managed to kick on again after that. But yeah, Drogheda looked very solid. I think there's not too many teams in the league that can match Galway physicality-wise, but Drogheda are probably one of those. I was very impressed with Andy Quinn and in particularly Conor Keeley at the back. The other night, as I mentioned, Farrell and Brennan were brilliant in the midfield, and then Thomas up front really gave them a good outlet. So they've got a good spine, without mentioning even Markey there, they've got a really good spine going through the team, Drogheda. Galway have had a good start to the season, so I think this will be very, very tight.
I think so as well. I don't like going against Drogheda at home.
No.
But... could they drop some points here?
I'm going to go 1-1. I think this will actually be a good game.
Yeah,
it won't be maybe the prettiest football in the world, but I think it'll be lots going on.
I agree. I'm going to say I follow you 1-1.
Okay.
I'm iffy about that, though. I think Galway could nick this, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Jim's going 0-0, so we're all expecting it to be tight there.
Do you know what? We'll go different. I'll go 2-1 Galway.
Okay, grand. Pats, sorry, not Pats yet. We'll go to them shortly. Shells against Rovers. This is the live Virgin Media game on Friday night.
Yeah.
Should be a cracker.
And Rovers will be... delighted to have the extra few days off after their extra time and penalties exploits the other night. I think, could this be one of the ones where, like, we'll say Shelburne are happy with a point and move on?
No, I don't think idea? So. I don't think so. I think Shells will go for this. I think that front two could do a bit of damage here, that Rovers back three, that tired Rovers back three.
I think they're permanently tired. I'll go 2-1 to Shelburne.
Yeah, going exactly the same. And Jim going 2-1 to Shelburne as well. So there we go. And Pats against Sligo.
This is the one for Pats, isn't it? Has to be.
Yeah, should be.
I think...
Although everyone thought, you know, Pats draw at opening day, but opening days are opening days. I think it's time for Pats to get their first 3 points here.
Yeah, roll up their sleeves, get it done. I think this could be a bit... this could be a nightmare here for Sligo. Out in Inchicore, disappointment in AMDC Park last weekend. And I know, was Kenny doing a bit of bitching as well about handballs and stuff like that? I think they could open up here on Sligo. I'm going to go 3-0 to St. Pat's.
No, I'm not just sure it'll be.
Like, if you look at the defending from Sligo last week,
I was there. Like, I know.
Yeah, I know that. And I'm just saying, but I'm like, even if they improve by half,
Oh yeah, that should.
They're
be
miles off it. Like, and getting pushed around the place, falling over themselves, tripping over themselves, no blocking, no guts. Could be 3-0 or 4-0. I'll stick with 3-0, but okay. I, you know,
Yeah, I'm gonna go 2-1 Pats. I don't know who's gonna do the scoring for Sligo though. Jim's going 2-0 to Pats, which is probably a better prediction in hindsight, but I'll stick with mine. Right, moving down into the first division. Hopefully Wexford against Bray gets the green light on Friday night.
Absolutely. Bray and Wexford not playing at the weekend because both of their games were called off, a bit of a pain in the hole. I think I'd be leaning towards Wexford here. I'm gonna go for a 2-0 win to Wexford.
Yeah, I was gonna go 2-0 as well, but I'll stick with 2-0 actually. Jim going 2-0 as well. There you go. Telepathic boys. Treaty against Harps.
This is a big one now. You know, Treaty did really well. They've scored 7 goals. They're probably the top scorers in the division. Well, they are. They have probably started really, I think they've started really well. I think the Cove game, you could nearly write off. 2 goals in injury time after not dominating the game, but they did really well to go 2-0 ahead in the opener.
Mm.
And we're not impressed with Finn Harps.
No, look, very, very limited. Very, very,
very limited.
They did, to be fair, in the game against Dundalk, they did create some chances as the game went on. Couple of goal mouth scrambles and all the rest. So probably not a bad performance from Harps the other night, but overall, they probably are just lacking in a lot of areas at the moment. So
yeah.
What's your prediction?
2-1 Treaty.
I was gonna go 2-1 Treaty, so I'm gonna go 2-0. Okay. Tactical, and Jim is going for a 3-0 win to Treaty. There's could be a difficult night at the office for poor old Harps. UCD against Cove.
Yeah, another one of the teams that fell foul of the weather last week.
Yeah, hopefully this goes ahead too.
Yeah, I was thinking of going along to it, but I think I've something else on. I'm raging.
Busy man.
Can't go to the bowl. I think this is going to be a test for Cove Ramblers. We're all thinking, well, certainly myself anyway, thinking that UCD are going to be in and around the playoff positions, top end of the table for a large part of the season. The opener was a tough defeat at home.
Yeah, so is it actually nearly maybe no bad thing they've had an extra week on the training ground?
I think so. You kind of run that out of you nearly. Mm. But this is a good test for Cove Ramblers. Can they gather it up together to play what will be like a playoff rival?
Yeah.
Come the end of the season, I'm gonna go for a 1-1 draw here.
What were you gonna say?
I'm not sure if Cove have gathered it up together yet.
Yeah, I'm gonna go for a 1-0 win to UCD, and Jim is going for a 1-1 draw as well. Kerry against Dundalk. There's a huge Dundalk crowd going down to this, and I am not among them. Before you ask, Gary.
Oh, you're not playing down with your with your friend, no.
No.
I
see. There's a busload going from Dundalk to Dublin Airport at 6 o'clock on Friday morning. There's going to be some scenes in that way, and come 7:45 Friday night at Mount Hawk Park.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Fair play to them.
I think
Ryanair have changed the flight actually. I think it's really early in the morning. Remember when we went down, it was lovely. I think it was 12 o'clock or
like that, yeah.
Just beautiful now. Yeah,
could be a 9 o'clock flight or something like that, actually, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit of a pain. But look, that's all part of it.
I think, yeah, from what I hear, whatever allocation they get, they're going to sell out. There's a couple of hundred going down, so.
Yeah, I'm right. The flight is at 9:05 on Friday morning. 160 brick. One way.
We paid 20 quid or something.
We paid 40 return, yeah.
Exploitation going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, look.
Lots of money back in Dundalk these days.
No comment.
Money is no object.
Okay.
From what I understand, the team's staying down there Thursday night.
Is that true?
So no excuses here.
Where did you hear that?
I heard it through the grapevine.
You texted me that earlier. I was like, no way is that true. But right. All of that aside, I think this is a real test here for Dundalk.
Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier, Kerry have conceded a goal this season in all of their 2 games. But great way to start the season. You want to keep that going. I think it'll be a really
two teams with perfect defensive records, actually.
Oh, that's right as well. Yeah. Little so.
Yeah, not a bad show. I think this will be very, very tight. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win to Dundalk, though.
Another free kick or something like that, maybe.
Set piece.
Set piece job, yeah. Fair enough. And Jimmy?
Jimmy is going for a 3-1 win to Dundalk. I'm not sure it'll be that high scoring, to be honest.
No, I don't think so. I can't see it.
And then I'll give you his prediction for the big game of the weekend. That is, of course, the El Clasico de Midlands between Longford Town and Athlone. And he thinks this is going to be one of those typical derbies where there's a lot of kicking going on, but not a lot of score. And he's going 0-0.
Oh, okay. Look,
I don't see that, to be honest.
Neither do I.
This is going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, actually.
Longford have to win this, really, to get the season up and running, or a lot of enthusiasm will be gone already after the opening weekend.
I don't think Longford Town have to win this, actually.
Oh, they have to win this.
Why?
They can't lose it anyway.
Because of Athlone.
They have had two really bad seasons, and they look like a team that they've brought in a lot of young players that don't have a lot of League of Ireland experience. And as a result, a lot of people are writing Longford off, having them down to be one of the bottom teams in the league.
Yeah.
600 and something at the opening game. Now, the weather was absolutely atrocious, but that's a big drop from what we've seen in terms of opening games in the last couple of years. So I don't know how big the interest outside of the core support base is for this Longford team. So this is probably a reprieve job here. You've lost that first game. It wasn't a classic. You'd expect a drop off, but you've got the local derby coming up and maybe one that you can win. So this is a chance to maybe keep some of those floating supporters aboard. So I think Longford have to put on a bit of a show here, in all honesty.
So what's your prediction?
There's a lot going on at that loan at the minute, as I said. So I think Longford have a chance here of gathering this up. If they stay disciplined, stay compact, and wait for the cracks to appear in front of them, I'm going to go for a 2-0 win to Longford Town. This is one of those games. If Longford could win this 5-0, or they could lose a 5-0, that's the sort of game this is going to be. I mean, we don't have to go back that far for Longford to be 3-0 up at half time, and we're blessed not to lose the game 4-3 down that loan last year. So anything can happen in these sort of games. I'm going to go 2-0 to Longford, but we'll have to wait and see.
I'll follow you 2-0.
You wouldn't know what had happened between now and then.
Fair enough. Yeah, yeah.
What might happen post match or anything. So there's a lot of moving parts, as they'd say.
Yeah, no, I understand. Look, I think there's an opportunity here. Like Longford Town were, you know, had a bit of time, we'll say, potentially to rectify stuff that, you know, they mightn't have been happy with in the opening game. Although, like at the end of the day, the goal they conceded in that game was a flicked off the head OG.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like a hammering or anything like that. And while, yes, I think Bray were better, like, the Longford Town weren't too bad either. So I think there is potential in the team. And I think, you know, first game jitters out of the way. As you mentioned, there's a lot of young players that are making their debut at this level. That's gone now. Mm. So there's plenty of opportunity for a good result here. So, yeah, no, I think 2-0 is a good prediction. On the town.
Yeah, no, because I'm just looking, we were talking earlier about the opening weekend, Longford and Bray having a lot of new players to bet in. Like, I'm just looking at the Athlone team that played that game against Treaty the other night. I think there's 7 new signings there in the starting 11. So there's a lot of betting in for them to do as well, and it hasn't got off to a good start.
I think the difference is, though, that a lot of them players are in the middle of their career in the League of Ireland.
On paper, they have better players at the minute, but
yeah, but like if you look at like it was even Kyle O'Connor that went from Longford to Athlone there, like he has like 40 or 50 games at the league.
Mm.
So like, you know, that's a good thing. Oh, look, to have.
The money's been spent at Athlone. There's no doubt the money has been spent. Question, whereas Longford don't seem to have those resources at the minute. So I haven't looked at the betting on that game. I don't know what way it is, but it'd be interesting to see what the bookies think of it. Right, that was the BTS Predictions League. Before we move on to take the hotline in, I think we're going to have a look at how our fantasy football is coming, Gary.
Oh, what's the story now? I think I haven't. I didn't look at it last week.
Yeah,
I completely forgot about.
Neither did I, to be honest. I'm just having a look. I think we're well down the league. So the Between the Stripes League, Sam Ahern currently joint top with Derek McCormick, both on 155 points, but there's a host of players on 154. So it looks like we're going to have a very, very good title race. I'm having to do a fair bit of scrolling here to find me. And, oh, sorry, that's the overall league I'm looking at there. Let me look at the BTS league. Robert Jones, top of the Between the Stripes League on 139 points. Three clear of Niall Torres, who's on 136. And then Brian Doherty, one of the very few remaining Derry listeners we have, is on 127. And Adam Doyle, he's raging
now.
Well.
He paid the tenner, and now he can't get out.
I'm second bottom on 87. Where are you? You're 3 points ahead of me.
Oh, not so bad.
Can I see your team here? It doesn't show when you click into.
I don't think you can, no.
Or can I go back to last week? Yeah, no, that's not great. Anyway, that's how the fantasy football is coming.
The predictions league is where it's at, though. That's the bread and butter.
That's the bread and butter. We won't take our eye off that. Look, let's go into the BTS hotline for this week and see what our listeners have got to say. Git, why did Rovers not turn off the water on Sunday? And if Cork can bring 20,000 away fans to every game, surely they'll be safe. Interesting. Dwayne Doyle, are Shells still fourth favourites? So I think I've said this earlier. I think Shells have gone up a couple of places in my predictions in my head between the start of the season and now. I've been really impressed with how sharp they look, particularly that front two. Harry Wood playing some great football. They're still very solid at the back. So I think they'll be in the top two. I don't know what you think, Gary.
Yeah, but probably does require a bit of a review from us. I can see why I thought that they would be a bit further down, but two really good opening results, and they're looking into Shamrock Rovers now we'll take these as well. So I can see, yeah, it does require a bit of review. It probably will be closer to the top of the table come the end of the season.
Sam, since Farrell is on the pod, what's your chicken fillet roll order?
Oh, garlic mayo.
All right, okay.
A small bit of lettuce, cheese, red onion, and spicy chicken.
No, you lost me at the garlic mayo. I wouldn't have red onion either. Now, I haven't got chicken fillet roll in a while. I'm actually on an old diet at the minute, but usually just play it simple enough. A bit of taco sauce, spicy fillet, bit of cheese, maybe a bit of sweet corn, and a bit of stuffing. It's hard to beat as well.
Oh, brutal, lad. That is mouthy, that is. What are you eating?
That's why I'm on a diet, lad. I was eating them for 6 months solid. Now look at me. Lord Chuckles Academy. He wasn't, I don't think he meant the Sligo Rovers game at the weekend, but he said he was well off not seeing it. Worrying about the amount of goals conceded, over to Russell to rally them lads and turn it around against Pats. I think you said that earlier. Like, will we see kind of a rally from Sligo in the second half of the season, like we did last year? DD, who's a Derry fan, what's the obsession with Derry spending and squad age profile among fans of other clubs? It's like no other teams pay wages or has players over the age of 30. To be fair, I don't think there's too many teams that can pay a transfer fee reportedly to be about £40,000 for the boy Holt that they signed the other day. And the wages, I've seen some mad figures out there, how accurate they are or not. I don't think there's too many teams in the league that can afford that. But again, there's nothing wrong with that. It's Philip O'Doherty's money. He's entitled to spend it whatever way he wants. But I'm sorry to break it to you. That's going to be used as a stick to beat Derry City if they don't win something this season. That's why other fans are picking into the signings and the money and the age and everything else.
Yeah.
They're hoping that that's going to be a stick they can beat them with. It's just as simple as that. Altai, who played in the Predictions League recently, 67 teams expressing an interest in the new third tier. There's around 18 counties that currently have no League of Ireland representation. Hopefully that can be filled. Just wondering if there are teams from the north to be included. Would that force the issue of an All-Ireland League? I know we had one of the teams tweet us the other day, a team from Tipperary, Peak Villa FC, to confirm that they've applied for the new third tier. They're based in Thurles Town, so if they were to get in, that'd be one of those 18 counties that Al's pointed out. That'd be one of them filled, so that'd be great. In terms of your Northern Irish question there, I think Dan McDonnell confirmed the other day on Twitter that, as far as he's aware, there's no teams from the north that have applied. Obviously, Shamrock Rovers 2 or B, there's talk of them being interested in entering a team, but it looks like it'll be a league where it's amateur contracts only. So that would make things a bit tricky there for Rovers. I think overall the feeling is that if you've got 67 teams that are new names in the League of Ireland, not B teams as such, obviously they should be prioritised to try and get new faces into the league as opposed to trying to have B teams. If the Premier Division teams, with all this money they have now, if they want to run a reserve league, I can see why they'd be interested in doing that. But
imagine how long the pod would be if you had to do three divisions.
Oh, God. Yeah. I actually bumped someone involved with a League of Ireland club at the Drogheda game. Now, he wasn't a Drogheda or Sligo Rovers man, but he was someone very, very prominent with another League of Ireland club. And he was given out to me that the podcast isn't long enough because he listens to it driving from one place to another. And he said if it was 3 hours, that would just be perfect for my journey.
So, oh, Jesus.
There you go. Some people are at us, it's too long. Some people are at us, it's not long enough. We cannot win. Sean Kelleher.
It'd be very interesting to see the criteria that these teams have to fill in. There's not going to be a 67 team division.
No.
So like the FAI have to really work hard and get it right for however many number. Like, is this going to be another 10 team division? Is it going to be like? Do we actually know that yet?
We don't know. I think, do we? I know isn't there talk of splitting it north, like different north and south division to try and limit the travel expenses.
Yeah, and that's very reasonable and understandable. But it'd be just interesting to see like what way are they going to be whittling down these teams?
Yeah.
Like, for example...
Well, we don't know. Like, for all we know at the minute is that these teams have filled out a form saying we're interested without having been given any sort of criteria. Will it now be a case of them being given criteria and maybe 20 of them will say, okay, we can't do this, won't do this, whatever. Yeah. There's a lot of questions still to be answered. I mean, even in terms of the promotion relegation, how is that going to work? Like, if a team like the one I mentioned there, Peak Villa, I'm now been ignorant here. I'm not aware of their facilities. Maybe they have adequate facilities to play League of Ireland First Division football. But let's say me and you start a team here, Kieran and Gary, Between the Stripes FC, and we're playing in a park in Longford somewhere.
Yeah,
and we get promoted. Like, are we going to be given X amount of years to get up to scratch stadium wise, contracts wise? How is all of that going to work? So there's a lot of questions to be answered, but I think everyone was probably a little bit surprised but thrilled to see 67 teams expressing an interest in the third tier. Sean Kelleher, what's a small bit more egg on your faces with the Kerry result? He does point out Cove were actually robbed. They had a perfectly good goal ruled out for handball when in fact the ball was smacked into the poor fella's face and went in. Yeah, I seen the Cove players going absolutely mental on the highlights and didn't get a second angle of it, but that obviously explains what happens there. Two Kerry games, two of the worst calls I've seen. I don't think we've talked about referees too much on this pod so far this season, so that's good. But yeah, thanks for the tweet, Sean. And Kieran Carrick, who do you think is the manager under the most pressure in the Premier Division? Lynch has spent a pretty penny and Rennie has now been given time. We didn't actually mention what was your takings on Lynch v Rennie, although, as I said earlier, I don't think Lynch had too much involvement.
Yeah, I think, well, firstly, because I was watching the game, like, there was no replay of it, so no one had a clue what was going on.
Mm.
Poor bit of production there. But I think the complete overreaction by the ref, no need to send the two of them off. I think at one point he was pointing at the ground or something like that to say that I think Lynch came out of his box or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you need to be sending people off for that? You know, where does it end? Like,
as you used to say, with certain managers or coaches in the league, they used to spend their time running up and down the touchline. So you'd be
busy. Steve O'Donnell in particular. Yeah,
and then O'Donnell seemed to be getting involved in some sort of verbals with, so I think the commentator said it was a steward, but you could see there was something going on the sideline even after the red card. So
yeah, there's a bit of main character there with Stephen O'Donnell. Like, he's like your man from Newcastle. Who's that number two that he get?
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So like, you know, I think, like, you know, there's no need for that at all, particularly after watching he might have got a yellow card or something like that.
Mm.
O'Donnell, I'm not 100% sure on that. But he just watched his manager get sent off and watched Lynch get sent off. Like, you know well that this ref is card happy, let's say. I think it was a complete overreaction over a nothing incident.
Okay, fair enough. Right, that was this week's Between the Stripes LOA podcast. Hopefully every game will go ahead this weekend, guys.
Yeah, hopefully, like weather-wise, it's been a bit drier in Dublin this week anyway. But, you know, I think with the changeability of Irish weather, it's just not ideal. I forgot to say it during the match, or when we were talking about the match, I was looking at some statistics there today. And Athlone were bet 5-0 on Friday.
Yeah.
They made 604 passes by the statistics I was looking at.
Jesus.
And how many did Treaty make?
I'm going to say in around 250 or so.
265.
Not bad. Good shooting.
Good shooting. You know, like, goes to show you don't need to pass it around. Just boot it into the net. Wins the games. Athlone got absolutely stone nothing from Friday and they made 604 passes. Game is gone, lad.
Yeah.
But we love it anyway.
We do. Look, so that's where we'll sign off. Any managers and coaches listening, we've given you the blueprint to success this weekend in the League of Ireland. Just boot it in the net and don't be worrying about racking up the passing stats. But
yeah,
that was this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast. As ever, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And I actually only realized recently, and I sent you some of the screenshots, Gary, you can leave comments now under the episodes on Spotify. And we had some really nice comments on previous episodes from listeners. So
another avenue for abuse.
Maybe Derry fans stay away from that. Yeah. But everyone else, if you're enjoying the pod while you're listening back to it here, then do leave a comment on the Spotify. You can leave us a comment on Twitter. We're on TikTok now as well, so do search for Between the Stripes there. And I brought you earlier on interviews with Shane Farrell and with Mick McDermott. But if you want to hear an interview with Kevin Doherty as well from the weekend, from the game against Sligo, then you can get that on our members club, where we've got lots of exclusive content coming up throughout the course of the season. Just check out our Twitter feed and you'll find links to our members club there. But for this week, from Kieran Burke and Gary Riley, from our sponsors, Anthony Quinn, quinnav.ie, who we won't be speaking to between now and Sunday, depending on the result. Huge thanks for tuning in, and we will speak to you next week.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.